Frank Talk 104. News, sports, and more.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. It's Saturday, March 27th, 2010. I'm coming to you live on Frank Talk 104.3 FM, as well as worldwide over the internet at lwrn.net. lwrn.net is the flagship website for Liberty Works Radio Network, a network that brings you this fine programming that you will not hear anywhere else. We need your support. At LWRN, you can go to lwrn.net or call the network at 410-848-9191, which is also the call-in number. Well, as always, I dedicate my show to our Father in Heaven. So I urge you to pray as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is in deep, deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey His commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. You can join my email list by going to freedomabovefortune.com. I've got a new website called agentfortruth.com, and I encourage you to have paper and pen handy because we always try to give out very good information for you. I'm a former IRS Criminal Investigation Division Special Agent, worked for the IRS from 1993 through 1999, and normally give a little bit more information, but we're going to do a little something different this time. I have a guest, attorney Tom Cryer. He's been with us before. And what we're going to do is basically Tom's going to interview me for the first hour, and I'm going to interview him for the second hour. And we believe that we have pretty compelling stories, thanks much to the IRS and how they do things. So, Tom, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, go ahead, Tom.
You know, you mentioned it all sort of an unusual format today, but a lot of folks, you know, I get emails or I'll get, you know, a call or whatnot, and they're saying, well, you know, you keep referring to a story, you keep referring to a struggle, but, you know, people like you and I don't really like to go out and talk about ourselves, and so we don't get the story out, but really your story, and I suppose to a lesser extent mine, are are really something the public needs to know. And we don't get out there and pump ourselves because of our personalities just don't fit that way, do they?
No, but we've been urged to get the story out, so they'll say it again, and be happy to do so.
No, I think it's important that we do because, you know, folks are listening to it. You and I have to say during the course of our programs, and I have a program on Monday through Friday from 5 to 6 Eastern on this network. You have this program for 2 hours on Saturday mornings, and I think it's important that they know who they're hearing from, you know, because we're not just people that just walked off the street and said, hey, I've got an opinion. Both of us come from backgrounds where we're in a position to know things that the general public doesn't have access to.
Yeah, very, very unique has history, and of course that gives us a unique opportunity to let people know some quite an interesting story.
Well, if you only, what do we just go ahead and get started? I'm going to take over your show for the first hour, as I understand.
Please do. Take the controls, Captain.
And, you know, let's start with letting people know where Joe Bannister come from. How did he, you know, who is he? What's his training? What what's his education, and how did he get, you know, more or less into, of all places, a man of integrity in the Internal Revenue Service?
Well, I grew up in San Jose, California, you know, middle class upbringing, Roman Catholic, elementary school, high school, went on to college at San Jose State University, graduated from there way back in 1986, and my degree was in accounting, so that was the kind of work that I did after graduating from college. And after a few years working in the accounting field, I realized just how incredibly boring that kind of work was. And, you know, people might think, well, couldn't you figure that out on day one of your accounting class? And I probably should have. But a mentor of mine when I was a young man said that, you know, if you get a degree in accounting, if you get an accounting background, you'll always have work. And he was really right. I actually planned to pursue a career in law, but it just got to be too much at that time, you know, with all the other things going on in my life. So anyway, got the degree in accounting and worked in the private sector accounting for a number of years, and then just kept having this feeling that I cannot do this kind of work for another 30 years. And so I started to look around for an alternative. And I had a number of friends and family who were in law enforcement, mostly local and state law enforcement, but even at least one gentleman who was in federal law enforcement. He was in an agency called the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And so I really got this bug that I wanted to pursue a career in law enforcement. I thought, surely that'll keep my interest and I'll stay motivated, you know, clear till retirement. And so I looked around, and I also spoke to this friend. His name was Bob. You know, still talk to Bob today. And he had spent, at that time, he was maybe 20 or 25 years as a special agent for the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And, you know, he was in the IRS during the 70s and 80s, working on all kinds of corruption cases. And he had another agent in the FBI, who they were good friends. And so Bob enabled me to speak with this FBI agent, and of course I spoke with Bob about federal law enforcement, and they were able to convince me quite easily that a federal career in law enforcement would be preferable to a state or local, mainly because of my background in accounting and finance and tax. So I went ahead and submitted an application to the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. My friend Bob said that, well, you're better off, you know, sending in applications to various agencies. If you put all your eggs in one basket, you know, you might be disappointed, and he was right. My heart was set on the FBI. Of course, they have TV shows and movies about even the X-Files, right? But the IRS
and all that.
Pardon me?
Ephraim Symbolist and all the, you know, those programs are exciting, you know, this and the other.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, if you're at the cocktail party and, you know, it just happens to come up what you do for a living, I mean, everybody's oohing and aahing, and, you know, but if you tell them, if somebody says that you work for the IRS, you'll wonder why there's no one left in the building. So
you start to check your armpits.
Exactly. So anyway, I was preferred the FBI, and I went down that route of applying, going through their background investigations, which are quite severe, and you know, basically qualified, went through all their medical, physical, anything that they could do to me, psychological, and was ready to be hired. But the FBI at that time in the early 90s was undergoing a hiring freeze. They could not hire a single person because the Congress was at a standstill and could not pass a budget. So meanwhile, I'm in this two-year holding period, basically waiting for this hiring freeze to end. And meanwhile, it was about August of 1993, after about 2 years of waiting, that the IRS Criminal Investigation Division from San Francisco, they called me and asked me if I'd be interested in a position with them. And for those that, you know, don't know, the IRS, they have various divisions within it. There's the examination division. Those are the auditors that come out and audit you. The collection division, those are all the revenue officers that come and seize your bank accounts, put liens on your house. And then there's the criminal investigation division, and they, about 3,000 special agents, they are criminal investigators, and they investigate violations of the federal tax and money laundering laws. So meanwhile, I'm waiting for the FBI, and they're not, you know, going to hire me, and the IRS comes along. And so basically the idea grew on me that, wow, you know, maybe this wouldn't be too bad. I mean, I'm already an accountant. I'm already a certified public accountant, courtesy of the state of California. You know, I think this would be quite interesting work. I'm certainly geared up for it. And, you know, maybe being able to tout that I'm an FBI agent isn't all that us cracked up to be. I mean, you know, is there a little too much pride going on there? And what about the actual work? So the idea grew on me, and in November of 1993, I went ahead and agreed or accepted the offer to become a special agent for the IRS. And it was November of 1993 that I was sworn in there. Interesting that the swearing-in ceremony, you know, I've seen them be where there'll be 20, 30, or 50 new IRS agents that are brought in for to swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And on the particular day that I was sworn in, I was the only employee. So I got to do it up in the, you know, 14th floor of the federal building. They're in the chief's office. He's got the corner office with the windows overlooking the San Francisco Bay with the flag and my family and the video camera. And it was very, very meaningful. And especially because I was taking an oath to God to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And, of course, I very much... You know, that oath meant a lot to me, and I intended to obey it and abide by it throughout my career, and I was very mindful of it. I just didn't realize at the time I took it what that would actually entail down the road.
I can identify with that.
That's right, because you took the same type of oath more than once.
Well, you know, oddly enough, you know, when I was sworn in to the bar, I was stationed at Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indianapolis, or just outside Indianapolis, and had to catch a flight down to New Orleans for the swearing-in ceremony, and my plane was delayed, or the flight canceled because of mechanical problems, and I was late getting to New Orleans, and by the time I got there, the swearing-in ceremony had already occurred. So I was, the State Department had a limousine at the airport, and they grabbed me up and ran me downtown and ushered me up to the chambers of Chief Justice Summers of the Louisiana Supreme Court. And I, too, you and I keep finding similarities, Joe, but I, too, ended up with a personal swearing-in ceremony conducted by Chief Justice Summers. In chambers, and with my parents there, and it was a occurrence, you know, that you never ever forget. But go ahead, I didn't mean to interrupt. But you, so here you are. You're bound. You're locked. You're loaded. You're heavily armed, and you are conferred with credentials, and you're sent out into the world to. You know, I don't want to say wreak havoc, but to enforce the laws of the United States and to bring the constitutional intent to bear.
Absolutely. And, of course, I had that mindset, you know, part of the oath that you say that without mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Right.
And perhaps there's those people that, you know, just take the oath and they don't really know what they're taking an oath to, don't really care. But I definitely cared. I really was very mindful of those words. So, yeah, I did kind of hit the ground running. Well, I guess we got a break here.
Yeah, let's roll in this
back.
Break. Folks, we're getting a get the host instead of get the guest in a Wolfian sense, Virginia Woolf sense. We're not going to get the guest. We're going to get the host, and the host can get even. next hour. We've got Joe Bannister on deck being interviewed. You're going to learn his story. You don't want to miss his story.
Want to receive a big return on your investment? Then take your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. For just $29.95, you'll receive Motorcraft Premium Synthetic Blended Oil and Filter Change. Rotate and inspect all four tires. Inspect air and cabin air filters. Test your battery, brakes, belts, hoses, and top off all fluids. This is no overpriced quickie roadside drive-thru. Ford of Ocala guarantees white glove service with genuine quality Ford parts and factory-trained service techs. Ford do-it-yourselfers Ford of Ocala's parts department is open to the public, stocking genuine Motorcraft parts with a factory guarantee. Ford of Ocala is the name you can trust. Your family and its safety are too important. Come to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. It's just $29.95. It's ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen, where every day is a sale day. Their service will make the difference. Highway 441 Ocala and Bellevue. The traffic's not bad at all.
Frank's Family Restaurant in Hernando is more than just a great eating spot. For years, it's been a place to see your friends, catch up, and enjoy great home cooking. Frank's Family Restaurant is just that, a comfortable place to get great food within your budget, with daily specials for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, along with many choices from their regular menu. Frank's Family Restaurant opens 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. and Fridays till 8, 7 days a week. Frank's Family Restaurant is known for their fresh home cooking with large portions and their family-friendly atmosphere. Stop by. You'll see Frank's will be one of your favorite places to eat.
Come in and have a cool drink with Phil tonight. We're running all sorts of specials to make you happy. All I know is I love you all for supporting me and keeping me in business for 20 years now.
Frank's Family Restaurant, located at the junction of Highway 41 and Route 200 in the Hernando Plaza. Take out or dine in. Call Frank's at 352-344-2911. That's 344-2911. For Frank's Family Restaurant, you'll feel just like you're at home at Frank's Family Restaurant.
Start spreading the news.
Live is the morning program on radio all over the country, the great WABC in New York and the Fox Business Network, and a new affiliate, WIFM. 104.3 Frank Talk at 104.3 News, Sports, and More.
Glenn Beck. Frank Talk 104.3. Best-selling author Mark Levin.
That's what we call crap. Get off the phone, you big dope.
Frank Talk 104. News, Sports, and More.
We've all heard of the great one. And there's plenty to celebrate here at the Insurance Den, with tremendous savings on your business, home, and auto insurance. And you don't have to wait for Santa Claus to come to town for the great gift of savings that you'll get at the Insurance Den. Every day is like Thanksgiving and Christmas. The Insurance Den, for great rates on commercial and personal policies. Call 1-800-356-3947. That's 1-800-356-3947. The Insurance Den. We're staying right here.
Be sure and check your mailbox for the Great Savings Magazine. The Great Savings Magazine, loaded with all of your favorite coupons. Elite Roofing, new and re-roofs. Excellence in roofing. Call now at 352-794-1013. Visit our new location at 713 West Gulf to Lake Highway, Crystal River. Excellence in roofing, new and re-roofs. Flat metal, shingle and tile roof cleaning. Free estimates always. Elite Roofing, fully transferable warranty. Licensed and insured. 352-794-1013. 10-year workmanship warranty always. Quality, honesty, and reasonable prices. The foundation of our business, Elite Roofing. Check out our special free upgrades from standard felt to rubber underlayment. Ask us how you can save lots of money on your homeowner's insurance. Ask us at Elite Roofing. 352-794-1013. Elite Roofing. New and re-roofs. Excellence in roofing.
Live is the morning program on the radio all over the country, the great WABC in New York and the Fox Business Network, and a new affiliate, WIFL 104.3, Frank Talk at 104.3, News, Sports, and More.
Glenn Beck. Frank Talk 104.3. Best-selling author Mark Levin.
That's what we call crap. Get off the phone, you big dog.
Frank Talk 104. News, Sports, and More. Liberty Works Radio Network, enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic, helping you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation. Please do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details. Liberty Works Radio, truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. And we've turned the tables a bit. My guest, attorney Tom Cryer, is interviewing me for the first hour, and then I'm going to interview him for the second hour. So, Tom, handing the controls back over to you.
All right. Now they got you on the deck, probably I could ask you some pretty embarrassing questions, but I'm not going to do that. Here you are. When we left off for those exciting commercials and announcements, here you are sworn in. You're all decked out. You've got your badge. You've got your sidearm. You've got your jaw set. You're ready to go out into the world and do a lot of good and serve your country. At that time, did you realize that your country and your government weren't the same?
I did not. I mean, I certainly had some indication. You know, I was a pretty avid reader of newspapers. I listened to talk radio shows on AM radio. I knew that there were some big problems, but I never would have taken the job at the IRS had I known that there was such a flouting, you know, an ignoring of the law and, going way beyond the authority that the law had given the agency or the federal government in general. So, no, I had no idea of what I was about to find a few years later.
They didn't just hand you a badge and a gun and say, get out there, boy. They put you through an indoctrination or training process. Can you describe that generally, what you went through as far as how did they tell you what law you were going to enforce and how you were going to go about doing it?
Well, interesting, the first day on the job, actually the day before I went over to get sworn in, I was sitting there at my desk and I was almost twiddling my thumbs, but, you know, coming from the private sector, that was a no-no. I didn't want to be, you know, getting paid for doing nothing, but I had no casework, nothing to work on. So I reached up in the shelf above me to the Internal Revenue Code, and I began to open these big, thick books, for anyone that's seen them, to look at the actual statutes that I'd be investigating. And my boss, a guy named Alex, a former Marine, he comes over and barks at me and says, "What are you doing looking in that book?" And I said sheepishly, "Well, I'm just looking at the statutes that I'm going to be investigating." He said, "Close that book. You're not a CPA anymore. You're an IRS special agent. You don't need to be looking in that book."
Did that cause you any concern, or did it raise any questions in your mind?
Well,
the law that you're supposed to enforce is off limits.
It was some real culture shock there. I mean, I didn't really understand the ramifications at the time. I thought it was just, you know, this former Marine who just likes to bark around at people. But, you know, it was very different than what I had experienced in the private sector, where looking into what the law says is favored. It's not frowned upon. And yet my first day on the job, when I really have no other work to do anyway, I'm trying to actually at least do some research, and I get my hand slapped. So it certainly was a factor as I began to put these things together, that the IRS didn't do things, according to Hoyle. I also underwent a background investigation for the IRS, and part of that involves an audit. And it's kind of a long story, but I basically was audited as an employee, and they made some allegations that were completely false, and I had to fight them, the IRS fighting IRS, to say that these were completely false allegations, and I ended up prevailing and actually ended up getting a refund. I was too conservative on the tax returns at that time and got a refund. So there were these incidences that happened directly to me that
wonder. You had some red flags there,
yeah.
You just didn't recognize them at the time.
Exactly.
But when you look back, all of a sudden they take on a little more significance, don't they?
Right, which I'm sure most people, you know, in their lives, they kind of look back at different experiences and think, wow, I should have put two and two together at that time.
All right. Well, you're rocking along, and you get your training, and I take it the training did involve a lot of examination of the law itself, too.
Well, they would certainly train you on Fourth and Fifth Amendment, you know, as far as seizure, search, you know, whether or not people could talk to you if you came to talk to them. You know, did they have a right to not speak to you? Were they required to speak to you about how grand juries work and how, you know, you'd actually charge someone with a crime, the elements to a crime, learning about investigating a crime scene. This is the same kind of training that they'll put a deputy U.S. Marshal through, or a U.S. Secret Service agent, or a customs agent. You all go through this basic training at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. And then the secondary training is where each agent will go and learn more about their own agency-specific training. So the Secret Service agents will go off and learn about dignitary protection and counterfeiting. And the IRS agents will go and learn about money laundering and tax investigations. That training was really good training. It's the same kind of training. I was a criminal investigator just working for the IRS. And so I did the job for about 3 years and really had the time of my life. I mean, I was super fulfilled with the job. And I wasn't on a power trip where I was enjoying shaking people down for their meal and entertainment receipts. I mean, I was working on very high-level investigations, sometimes jointly with the FBI and the DEA and the U.S. Customs Service. And I thought, wow, I mean, this has been a great 3 years. I can only imagine how much fun the next 17 years are going to be.
Yeah.
The thing about federal law enforcement is you only have to work 20 years to get a full retirement. So, you know, I'd be in my early 50s. And retired, and I just thought life couldn't be better than this.
Right.
Well, in December of 1996, approximately 3 years into my work there, I was listening to a talk radio show. As I said, I was an avid listener, read all about current events and things. And this show in the San Francisco Bay Area on KSFO had a host named Jeff Metcalf. He spelled his name odd, G-E-O-F-F, or at least unique. Jeff Metcalf, and Jeff had a guest on his show whose name was D.V. Kidd, and her first name was spelled D-E-V-V-Y, D.V. Kidd. And so I'm listening to the show, and, you know, I was always like Jeff before because he was very truthful. He didn't seem to be partisan, you know, where Republicans are always right and Democrats are always wrong. He just would talk about truth. He would talk about the Constitution. I really, really liked him. I thought he had a lot of integrity. Then he has this guest, D.V. Kidd, on the show, and she's basically saying that the income tax is voluntary in the sense that when you look at the actual laws that passed by Congress, the vast majority of Americans, you know, are not required to pay the income tax, and yet they're paying it anyway. And she would point out, basically fraud and deceit on the part of the IRS to get people to do this. So, you know, if you can imagine me driving around in my government car doing my investigations and listening to this show and, having some lady come on the show and say the income tax is voluntary, I'm thinking to myself, well, lady, if you check out this Sig Sauer 9mm that I got on my hip and these handcuffs, this tax ain't voluntary.
Yeah.
But I just...
You thought she had a lot to learn, didn't you?
Yeah, she had a lot to learn. So, it was compelling in the sense that this talk show host, I thought, okay, there's a problem here. Either Joe isn't this great crack investigator that he thought he was because he has misread Jeff Metcalf and his integrity, or there's something to what DV Kid says about the income tax.
Well,
and I thought,
let me ask you something at this point. You know, was that your first exposure to the tax honesty movement, or had you had occasion to investigate so-called tax protesters prior to that time?
No investigation. The only exposure was probably IRS training and pamphlets explaining that there was this group of people called illegal tax protesters, which, by the way, the IRS is now forbidden to use the term. But there's this group called illegal tax protesters, and they come up with this cockamamie, you know, BS that shouldn't be believed or even looked at. And that was basically my mindset prior to hearing TV Kid on the radio.
All right. So after hearing her, how was that different?
Well, it was different because the credibility that Jeff Metcalf had given to me over a two-year period prior to that made me think that he was credible. I mean, I really believed in the man. And then when he has the woman on the show saying these crazy things about the income tax, I thought, okay, you know, what's wrong with you, Joe? I thought I could read people. You know, Jeff Metcalf's a man of integrity. I listened to him daily for 2 years. But the income tax ain't voluntary either, so how can he be having this woman on the show? So I had to get to the bottom of this, this discrepancy, you know, between what my trust in Jeff Metcalf versus this stuff that I thought was outlandish, said by DV Kid. And so she gave the opportunity to order some little booklets that she put out and gave an address, and they were like a buck a piece, so, you know, she wasn't making any money off of it. And so I ordered these little booklets, and they're about 50 pages a piece. One was called Why a Bankrupt America, and the other was called Blind Loyalty. I imagine they're still around. And so I ordered these books, received them, and began this about a two-year process on evenings and weekends, trying to get to the bottom of DV's allegations, her claims that the income tax wasn't required to be paid by the vast majority of Americans. And, you know, certainly couldn't have much more of a skeptical observer in me, but I was just driven to find out either, you know, what is it, Joe? You're not a good investigator, or there's something about this income tax. It has to be one or the other. And yet my entire professional life was wrapped up around the income tax prior to going in the IRS as a CPA. And then, of course, the government trusting me to carry a gun and a badge around enforcing the income tax laws. This was not wishful thinking on my part that what DV Kid said was true.
Yeah.
So where
did you go and look? You know, if somebody was like you hearing this today, saying, you know, well, I want to do that. I want to go investigate that. Where did you go to investigate? Where did you look? Where did you find the truth?
Well, in these booklets she gave out, which was contrary to what I'd been trained, you know, the IRS said that these people that had these kinds of beliefs would piece together, you know, odd things from all over the place to try to create some cockamamie argument. So I was kind of taken aback when DV Kid's booklets provided not only the names of the people making these allegations, but their phone numbers and their addresses. And of course, any investigator, I mean, you use the telephone a lot more than you use your gun. So I just thought I'd get on the phone and start talking to these people. And I was completely honest and open with them. I told them that, you know, during the day, during the week, I work as an IRS Criminal Investigation Division special agent, but I'm calling you as a citizen. I'm here on my own time, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of these claims that DV Kid made. And, you know, at first, a lot of these people that I called were thinking, okay, come on. I've got an IRS criminal investigator calling me, and he's just on a little personal fact-finding mission.
You didn't understand their skepticism?
Yeah, well, over time, I had to keep, you know, pinching myself. Now, remember, Joe, these people are scared to death of you, the whole public is. So to their credit, they did, you know, field my calls and my questions and sent me a bunch of information even that I didn't ask for. So the bottom line was they were extremely open with me, which was also contrary to what the IRS had trained me to believe. that these people, you know, when the light of truth is shown on them, they run and hide like cockroaches.
Uh-huh.
Well, that wasn't the case. They were extremely open.
These were cockroaches that didn't run, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So that experience kept replicating itself.
Here we are running right smack dab into another break, Joe. Folks, you're not going to believe what happened next. You know about his commitment. You know about his revelation. And what you're going to find out now is how the government reacted to it. Your public servants, stay tuned for the rest of this story.
Want to receive a big return on your investment? Then take your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury to Ford of Ocala and ask for The Works. For just $29.95, you'll receive Motorcraft Premium Synthetic Blended Oil and Filter Change. Rotate and inspect all four tires. Inspect air and cabin air filters. Test your battery, brakes, belts, hoses, and top off all fluids. This is no overpriced quickie roadside drive-thru. Ford of Ocala guarantees white glove service with genuine quality Ford parts and factory-trained service techs. Ford do-it-yourselfers Ford of Ocala's parts department is open to the public, stocking genuine Motorcraft parts with a factory guarantee. Ford of Ocala is the name you can trust. Your family and its safety are too important. Come to Ford of Ocala and ask for The Works. It's just $29.95. It's ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen, where every day's a sale day. Their service will make the difference. Highway 441 Ocala and Bellevue. The traffic's not bad at all.
Come on! What's going on?
It's a humdinger.
A what?
A humdinger of a store.
What store?
Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse.
Not only is Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse a humdinger of a store, it has humdinger prices. This 80,000 square foot building is full of bargains at unheard of savings. You'll find huge, huge savings on anything and everything you need, from food, health and beauty aids, housewares, domestics, hardware, pet supplies, automotive, lawn and garden, building supplies, and so much more. Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse has closeouts and surplus products at rock-bottom prices. You'll pay just pennies on the dollar. Whether you live near or far, you'll need to see this incredible 80,000-square-foot store. They're located in Ocala on Northwest 44th Avenue between Highway 27 and Highway 326, just north of the I-75 Super Flea Market. You'll find everything you need under one roof at prices you won't believe. Now that's a humdinger of an offer.
Check out Humdingers.
Tell them you heard this ad on 104.3 FM and get your free Humdingers baseball cap.
First impressions mean everything. As my dad always said, smile and the whole world smiles with you. Do you feel good about your smile? A beautiful smile awaits you at Dr. Harder and Associates Comprehensive Dental Care of Ocala, providing you with a natural, beautiful smile, cosmetic and restorative dentistry, a welcoming staff that looks forward to seeing your new smile for all your dental needs. Preventative, cosmetic, implants, custom dentures, teeth in an hour implants, custom and partial dentures, bleaching and luminaries. Your first visit is free, and you get $30 off your cleaning at Dr. Harder and Associates Dentistry. State-of-the-art equipment in a relaxing atmosphere at 8615 Southwest 183rd Street Road in Ocala. Or call their office at 352-873-1335. That's 873-1335. Call for an appointment now. For Dr. Harder and Associates Comprehensive Dentistry, accepted by the American Dental Association. A beautiful smile awaits you at Dr. Harder and Associates Dentistry. Or visit them on the web at HarderDentist.com.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
There's a reason education is because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. It's the big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the...
They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, the Agent for Truth, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. I've handed the controls over to Captain Tom Cryer, and he's interviewing me here for this first hour, and I'm going to interview him for the second. So, Tom, here you go.
All right. You know, we left off, and you had gone in and studied for 2 years. You dug and conducted your own independent investigation into the merits or demerits of these wild illegal tax protester claims that the income tax law did not require most Americans to pay the tax or to file a return. Well, what was your finding? What was the ultimate result of your investigation?
Well, the short story, after, you know, 2 years of this part-time off-duty research and investigation, is that I had to, you know, conclude that what DV Kid said on the radio that day was largely true, that the average American, you know, working for a living, not, you know, going off abroad to work or anything like that, but just, you know, the average Joe working in America did not require to pay the income tax and file these federal tax returns. And of course, that was a bit inconsistent with the job that I had held and what they wanted me to do. So I decided that the best course of action was to submit some of this evidence that I had accumulated to my supervisors at the IRS and tell them that, you know, I was having some difficulty because I basically arrived at a conclusion that I didn't expect to. But, you know, evidence is evidence. And you'd think that with an audience of other criminal investigators, they would agree with that. But now, you know, we're talking about pensions and paychecks and careers and all kinds of things. So I basically...
Before you get into what you did and how they responded, let me ask you something, because this is something you and I have both experienced, and I'm just curious. I know, and I'll never forget, you know, what it felt like when I had to finally turn loose of lifelong held beliefs that were based on what somebody said, that somebody heard somebody say. How did you feel about it whenever you finally had to conclude that everything, you know, that the IRS was doing to the working Americans, the people out there like you and me, was illegal?
Well, it rocked my world, Tom. I mean, when I was going to elementary school and high school, you know, we still had a Soviet Union and the Iron Curtain,
right?
And Fidel Castro and
all the propaganda, you know, that went with it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the stories about how people with a gun would be put to their head so that they would confess on a confession form, and there'd be torture and all of these just inhumane, ugly, despicable, tyrannical type governments. And I always grew up thinking that, wow, you know, how blessed I am to have grown up in a country, you know, home, land of the free and home of the brave type thing. And to find out that my own government and the government, you know, the agency that I was working for was engaged in very similar conduct just cut me to the core. It just really rocked my world, and I couldn't believe it, but it was, you know, all the evidence was right before my eyes. I had accumulated and validated that evidence. So I had to think to myself, what are you going to do about this, Joe? And so I thought, well, you know, my upbringing, certainly my parents, my dad, you know, who died just before I went into the IRS, he always told me to be a leader, not a follower, to tell the truth, you know, do the right thing. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna go to my supervisors and tell them what I've done. I've done this research, show it to them, and hopefully, even though that they might swallow hard like I did, they all took the same oath to support and defend the Constitution that I did, and they're all trained like I was trained. Surely something can be done to get this resolved.
Well, apparently they weren't raised like you were raised, though.
Well,
apparently.
Something didn't add up.
Right.
So I did go ahead and accumulate, you know, the highlights of the of what I had validated and investigated, and I presented it to my supervisors, and I basically said, you know, I've gone to bat for this agency. And the income tax, trying to disprove these, you know, so-called illegal tax protester arguments, but I'm not able to refute them. I mean, the evidence that they put forth is compelling and true, and so I need you, my supervisors, to help me understand why I've come to this conclusion. I can't serve two masters here. You know, either what this stuff says is true, and I need to change the way I do this work, or it's not true, but you can show me the error of my analysis, if any, and then I can put my tail between my legs and, you know,
get back to work.
And go back to work. Well, I said, but if you can't answer my questions, if you can't help me resolve this, I'm going to have to resign, because I just can't continue doing this, serving two masters. So they took me up on that statement about resignation, and they said they would not answer any of my questions, they would not review my report or respond to it, and that they would provide me with the paperwork necessary to tender my resignation. That was their response.
And they gave you a week to think about it.
Right. They sent me home for a week. They didn't fire me, but they just sent me home for a week and then expected me to tell them what I was going to do at the end of that week. So I went home and, of course, thought about it quite a bit, and I thought, well, with all I've learned about what they've done to people who have tried to expose them, the last thing I want is for them to destroy my reputation, because that's the only thing that'll make me credible, and you know, maybe people will believe me. So I decided that the best course of action was to resign, and I went ahead and did so February 25th, 1999. And so the main, I guess I don't have a whole lot of time here left, so I would just say that after resigning, I spent a number of years on the radio, you know, radio shows like this one. There aren't that many people that have worked for the IRS and have, you know, confronted them like I did while I was working there. So I tended to get a fair amount of notice. You know, Peter Jennings never called me up to be interviewed, but there was quite a bit of internet interest and radio interest. And so after all that interest percolated over the years, the IRS obviously was not happy with my beliefs, nor my speaking about my story. And so they decided on pounding me in a couple ways. The first way was to file a complaint against me for a disreputable conduct in the way that I represented a couple of clients who had IRS problems. And, of course, the clients never complained, but the IRS complained about the way that I conducted this defense of these clients.
Right.
And then the more difficult, challenging battle was that the IRS and the Department of Justice indicted me for preparing three false income tax returns and conspiring to defraud the United States of America. That indictment was in November of 2004, and my trial occurred about 7 months later in June of 2005. And, of course, you know, I wouldn't wish being indicted with federal charges on my worst enemy.
No.
That was, and you, you know, as you'll be talking about in the next hour, what an ugly experience it is to be accused of something that you've not done. And that's when you really look and see, wow, you know, do we have any rights left? And as much as I join the chorus of complaining about how our rights have been attacked, thankfully, we still have a few. I mean, we're exercising our First Amendment rights right now, Tom. And I had a right to counsel. I had a right to a jury. I had a right to a trial.
You should have a right to be able to exercise all of those rights without being falsely accused of a crime in an attempt to put you in prison and shut you up.
All right. And
you know,
I mean,
we think of other countries as putting people, locking political prisoners away, but we don't realize that we have hundreds of political prisoners locked away in prison, federal prison system right now, whose only crime was to do as you've done, learn the truth and dare to confront the government with it.
That's right. And as I said earlier, you know, that's the kind of things that give me a real pit in my stomach, is that I thought, and I want to make again, that this country is different than the other countries in the world. It's not a tyranny. At least it shouldn't be. Look at the Constitution and see if it spells tyranny as you read it. But that's exactly what the IRS does to people, and that's what they tried to do to me, to silence and discredit me. Thankfully, and this was no surprise to me, because I lived my life. I knew that I had done nothing wrong, nothing illegal. Everything was above board, ethical, moral, legal. And yet, nevertheless, after a two- or three-year investigation, they decided to bring these charges against me. And thankfully, I had a really good defense team, attorney Jeffrey Dickstein, attorney Robert Bernhoft, and they, you know, they say that Americans are innocent until proven guilty, and I can tell you that that's rarely the case anymore. They're basically guilty until proven innocent. And this defense team was helped me to communicate my innocence to the jury, and the jury was just dumbfounded at how the government could bring this case and they couldn't bring forth any evidence that I had done anything wrong. And under cross-examination, all of the government witnesses made me look really good, which, again, didn't surprise me, because I had done everything right and good from the get-go.
Right.
So, you know, the jury, even after the trial, they said, Joe, how come the government, every time they got up on the witness stand, they made you look good? And I said, well, they were using my documents. They were telling the truth. And the fact of the matter is that this government brought these charges against me, and they had no evidence of wrongdoing, and they just hoped that they throw it up on the wall and see what sticks.
Yep.
And thankfully, the jury was paying close attention and saw that this was a railroad.
Well, most juries assume that the guy is guilty or he wouldn't be there, and consequently, they just move forward and convict. Faith that the government wouldn't accuse one of us wrongfully.
Exactly. And again, once again, I learned the hard way that my government isn't to be trusted in that department. So I was acquitted of all those charges, and that was back in June of 2005, and we're approaching June of 2010. It's been almost 5 years since that acquittal. And I just continue to do what I did before the trial, which is to, when I'm invited, speak about my experiences and my beliefs. And I've always invited the IRS. There's no sour grapes here, even after the wrongful prosecution. Anytime they're willing to come to the table and discuss this and show me where I'm wrong, I'll tell the world.
And they've never taken you up on that invitation?
And that's the one thing they just won't do, you know. And they continue to claim that I'm a potentially dangerous taxpayer, I'm not to be believed, on and on and on. But they won't, you know, in a public forum, which we've even tried a few different times with other groups, they back out if they've even committed, or they ignore the opportunity. And
well,
you know,
people are afraid. You know, we ran into that phenomenon in Florida you were part of the team putting on the Truth Attack Altar seminars, and you saw how one of emailing out to all of the Tea Party leadership and whatnot frightened everybody away by saying that we were a bunch of tax evaders and we're trying to get people in trouble. A malicious and slanderous and defamatory statement that I have no doubt was initiated on behalf of the federal government.
Right at
the 11th hour when it's too late to counter it.
Right, and that's all they can do. And as you'll be able to talk about in during your interview in the next hour, how that's all they can do is they can only lie to people and try to tell people that we're not to be believed, don't listen to them, just like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right. Well, you know, Joe, it's amazing at how much, you know, not just your discovery about the law, but discovery about the character of our government that has been taken over by these power-crazed, megalomaniacal pretenders. And, folks, that brings us to the conclusion of the first hour of Joe's program. But stay tuned.
Want to receive a big